Okay, I'd like to start the annual meeting of the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority. We're going to dispense with roll call until the regular meeting. I'm sorry, dispense with the Pledge of Allegiance, but we will have roll call.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Graves?
I'm here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you very much. Public comment, I'm going to dispense with. There is no public present. Am I allowed to do that when there's no public present?
Yes, sir.
I thought we could.
Well, there's one.
You're not the public, you're an employee. New business and action items, status report and update of the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Last year in February, August, if you recall, we issued enterprise revenue bonds in the amount of $14.1 million for a number of projects that are identified in the agenda report. Prior to the issuance of the bonds, we entered into a JPA with Byron Bethany Irrigation District, and that resulted in what is known as the Discovery Bay Public Financing Authority, and the Byron Bethany has a mirror image of that public financing authority called the Byron Bethany Public Financing Authority. Per the terms of the legal documents and the contractual obligations of the Public Financing Authority Board, in which you are the Public Financing Authority Board in this case, we have to hold an annual meeting. It's been a year since you've last met in August, September of last year, so I thought it would be appropriate at this time to bring to you just an update of where we are. You've had a recent update from Gregory Harris on the projects themselves, but this gives you a little bit better view, I think, of the actual dollar amounts that are assigned to the different projects, as well as how much is spent to date, and the amount and the times when we made our debt service to Deutsche Bank initially, and U.S. Bank has since bought out the Deutsche Bank portfolio. So we, as of October 16th, on this agenda this evening, is actually a debt service payment to U.S. Bank in the amount of $559,000. So if the board, if the authority board has any questions, I'd hopefully be able to answer them for you. And that would meet the requirements required to hold our annual meeting.
Any questions? Marianne?
I have none.
Bill? Kevin? Chris? Oh, you're getting off easy tonight.
What's the timing of that payment?
I believe it's on this evening's
August
bond.
It's on the bond payment. It's due on October 16th. It's due tonight. Okay.
Well, it's not due tonight. We actually pay them before they're due, so that we're not late on them. So they are actually, they don't come from the checks that you're signing. They come from the bond proceeds of the bond.
All right.
Automatic. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? All right, are there any members' comments from the board? None? If there are no other comments, there is no public presence, I will adjourn this portion of the meeting. Adjourned. Ready? All right. Let's move on to the normal Community Center Services District meeting, and I will start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do you want to call roll again?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you very much. I'm going to dispense once again with public comment. There is no public present in the room tonight other than town employees. Item C, presentations, a brief report regarding the wetlands.
Yes, I think that she just walked in the room. This must be Samantha Beardsley. She's from the University of California, Berkeley.
Either that or you're clairvoyant, one or the other.
If you want to give her a moment to catch your breath and maybe do the consent calendar and come back to that.
Yes, let me do that. Let's move down to the consent calendar. If there's no questions, can I get a motion?
Move to accept.
I only had one question. That's on a.
Tell me which one you want me to pull.
What's on paying invoices?
Okay, well, let's pull.
I have one item on.
All right, let me pull it. I'm going to approve a register of district invoices. Can I get a motion to approve the rest of the consent calendar, please?
So moved.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we'll now discuss item E3.
Okay, the one question that I had was, and I should have sent it in, we have a community center monthly software charge. And I was wondering why we have a monthly software charge for the community center.
I believe that is for the, I don't have it right in front of me, was it $250?
Yeah.
That's for the...
the kiosk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's for the check-in system, and we've been using that with the swimming pool and with the sale of it's our financial tracking system for the community center, for example. And that's a monthly charge that the vendor that has the proprietary on the software charges. So that's a subscription price. If we were to get rid of it, we would just not have to pay the subscription anymore.
Correct, but aren't there other programs out there that we could buy? I mean, I don't want to go down that road right now. Okay, anyway,
we'll
you answered my question.
We'll make an agenda.
So, yeah, we'll bring it up. You answered my question. Thank you.
Are there any questions or discussion on that, Adam? If there's no discussion, then I need a motion again to approve item F.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. No further discussion. Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Let's go back to presentations.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. If you recall, back in July, we brought to the board an item regarding a supplemental environmental program between Town of Discovery Bay and the State Water Regional Water Quality Control Board. Part of that settlement with the state had to do with our wetlands project that we have down at our wastewater treatment plant. And this evening, and the board had asked for a presentation and update, and since some of the board members are new and haven't been here since the last presentation, Samantha Beardsley, who I understand is a graduate student at University of California, Berkeley, is here to give you that presentation and update on what the wetlands do and how they work and why it's critical for the environment.
Samantha, thank you for coming.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was late. I left at 4:30, but
who'd have known, right?
Underestimated the crazy amounts of traffic. Anyways, I'm really happy to be here. As Rick mentioned, my name is Samantha Beardsley. I'm a third-year PhD student at UC Berkeley. My advisor is David Sedlak, and some of the work I've drawn on for this presentation was done by my peers Justin Jasper and Mean Nguyen. And so tonight, I will be giving y'all a bit of an overview and an update on the work that we do at the what we call the Unit Process Wetlands over at the Wastewater Treatment Plant. So as an overview, I'll just go over treatment wetlands in general and the concept of what we call a Unit Process Wetland. Then I'll discuss a bit of our research on the removal of pharmaceuticals and waterborne pathogens from wastewater via these wetlands, and I'll wrap up by discussing how the work we've done here in Discovery Bay has led to the design and construction of a full-scale wetland cell at the Prado Wetlands down in Southern California. So just in general, wetlands have been built for many, many years for things like habitat restoration, recreation. In the last like 100 or 50 or so years, they've been used for removal of things like metals and nutrients. And we're starting to move into a space where wetlands are used to polish wastewater effluent, so secondary treated wastewater, to remove things like trace organic contaminants and even waterborne pathogens. And so these are a few examples of large-scale wetlands. The one on the left is down in, along the Santa Ana River, which is a wastewater effluent-dominated river in Southern California, and that's mostly for nitrate removal. And then in Texas and Florida, these are just large-scale wetlands for nutrient removal. And what we want to do is move into a space where we can just fully define the processes taking place in these wetlands and really understand rates of removal and all of the variables that you can tweak in a wetland system and view it more as a unit process, as in a unit process in a wastewater treatment plant, like a clarifier tank or filtration, things like that. So if we really pin down all the variables in a wetland and we're able to optimize them, we can then use these different wetland cells like unit processes. So this slide just shows, like in Discovery Bay, we have nitrified wastewater effluent coming in, and the POP cell is an open water cell. There's algae on the bottom. It means parasite enhanced oxidation process, but we'll kind of switch to calling it an open water cell. And then we have these two vegetated cells, and the idea is that different processes take place in each of these cells. So the pop cell has sunlight incoming. It's not shaded out with vegetation, so there's sunlight-mediated photolysis going on, and there are different types of biotransformation taking place in each of these cells. And so the idea being that if we can figure out exactly what's going on and how to better engineer wetlands like normal wastewater treatment unit processes, we can kind of mix and match them, put them in series, and optimize for the removal of our target contaminants. Here at Discovery Bay, we have these six wetland cells adjacent to the wastewater treatment plant, and this was built, I think, around 7 years ago. They used to be sludge drying beds, and then we got funding and help from all of you guys to turn them into pilot-scale wetlands. So right now we have, let me see if I can get the laser over there. No, okay, so the pop cell is that open water cell, like I mentioned. So there's a liner on the bottom so that vegetation is not able to grow. So you get around, we keep it around 20 centimeters of water, I think, and then maybe 5 centimeters of that is filled from the bottom with this fluffy algal mat. And so sunlight penetrates, and then the photolysis, and then that algal mat leads to biotransformation. And then bulrush and cattail cells are just as they sound. They're filled with their respective vegetation. And those are fully shaded out by the plants, and we believe that biotransformation is the most important process taking place. And so where you have a little red arrow is where our nitrified wastewater effluent comes in, and then the little box is where there's outflow. And that goes back to the headworks, since this is a pilot scale. And you can see on the bottom, we can choose to have that cattail and bulrush cell along the bottom in series. And so that lets us kind of rearrange things and see what variables we can change to increase transformation or removal of target contaminants.
So you're actually changing the bulrush or the cattail, or are there other green plants that you put into those?
These exist today talking about.
Right.
So the bulrush cattails and the bulrush, those three cells were originally generated 7-8 years ago. We have never changed the plant material in them.
Yeah, so the thought
process down the road would be to use a different plant and see what happens.
Yeah, well, so that's why we have different plants established in the different cells, to kind of see what the microbial communities in a cattail cell look like versus those, almost lost it, in a bulrush cell. And then if you put them in series, what goes on there rather than just running them in parallel. So, yeah, we can't actually change like the piping quickly, but by having some of them in parallel and then those two on the bottom in series, it kind of lets us design experiments where we can look at further removal with one cell after the other.
I'm jumping ahead.
What
I was talking about is to take the bulrush out of there and put some other plant, I don't know what plant, just to see what it does. Or you don't have enough information yet on these two items that you've run all the options.
Right. Okay. Yes, sir. We're just now starting to kind of figure out what's going on in these. But yeah, one thing that that I've done since I came is to kind of probe the microbial communities and their affinity for transformation of specific compounds. I've taken samples of bulrush and stuck it in the cattail cell just to see, and vice versa, just to see what changes. I actually don't mention this experiment, but what we found is that the native microbial community in that cell is really what matters. It's not like what substrate is in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that kind of gets at what you were talking about. And we can't really get like a mixed culture of the two vegetations because one ends up crowding the other one out. So when there's mostly cattails, you can't really get any bulrush established. You'll have a few here and there, but But yeah, the plants as different substrates is an interesting question we're kind of looking at.
So what you're saying is that it's more important the fact that it's an organic material rather than what organic material it is?
Yes, sir, exactly. Okay. And we're looking into that more, but that was one of our hypotheses actually was exactly that.
Okay.
The different carbon sources would be more important than ended up being.
Okay.
So that's a good lead into just a little bit of my work in those vegetative cells. And
Can I interrupt one?
Sure.
How long have you been working on the project?
This is my second full year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
so.
For our benefit, because so you, 2/3 of the time that it's been there, you've been working with it more or less, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is my third year at school and my second full year of
Great.
Research. I like to point that out so it's not like, wow, you haven't done anything. But yeah, I've been here like...
Good. That's good information.
Yeah, this is my third year involved with the wetlands. And so, like I mentioned, I focus on these vegetated cells. The rest of the work I'll discuss is that open water, that pop cell, and my colleagues did all of that work. But so this is what the bulrush looks like in the height of the summer. It's like, I don't know, 7-8 feet tall, and these are the cattails. They're starting to senesce now, so everything's getting brown and falling over. But just as a little bit of an overview of what I've been paying attention to, so the question that I've initially looked at is whether or not these vegetated cells can remove, or I would say transform, pharmaceutical residues. And so the motivation behind this type of work is that wastewater treatment plants were not designed to remove trace organic contaminants like pharmaceuticals that we take and then excrete. So a lot of these compounds listed here, they're like heart meds and antibiotics. They make it through the wastewater treatment plant and then into the wetlands. So we were thinking, can we use these wetlands as a polishing step before the wastewater effluent is discharged to surface waters? And so my initial probes were just to see whether or not these vegetated cells could biotransform these compounds into transformation products. And hopefully most of those are less active than the parent compound. So on the right, and the red bars are transformation rates in the cattail cell. And then on the left, the blue are transformation rates in the bulrush cell. And the y-axis on your right is a half-life, so the time that it takes for that concentration to decrease by half of the original. And most of the half-lives of these compounds are between 2 and 7 days, which is pretty good. So it shows that most likely biotransformation is taking place, so microbes in these vegetated cells are able to most likely accidentally eat these guys up and transform the compounds into more broken down compounds. Anyway, so our initial question being, do they do anything? The answer is yes. And so I get to spend my next 4 years figuring out exactly what and then how to optimize that transformation so that we can have a good set of defined variables, and then we can implement those wetlands as unit processes to remove these compounds.
Before you go on, so
yes, sir.
This seems to be now in conflict with the earlier statement, because apparently what type of organic material does seem to make a difference, because some are breaking them down quicker than others. Cattails, I guess the higher the bar, the longer it's taking to break down the half-life, is that correct?
It's opposite.
Other way around.
So the
cattail
yeah.
seems to be more effective almost consistently than the bulrush, is that correct?
Yes, sir. But so there are a number of variables. There's the substrate, the organic carbon, which are the plants. There's the communities present in those wetland cells. And so your earlier question of whether it's the plant or everything else, initially it seems like it's everything else. So when I say the cattail cell and the bulrush cell, it means like throughout that cell, like I take samples at the beginning, a couple times throughout, and at the end. And so, yeah, the cattail and bulrush are totally separate. So there are completely different microbial communities growing in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
We think
just
that
a way to make
why.
A distinction between the two more than anything else.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
And so this is just my field data. I've done stuff in lab, but I'd like to move on and discuss the top cell. And so the diagram, again, that's just the this open water cell. And got a good diagram here of the way that we have baffles built so that every bit of water, we try to get it to stay in there for the same amount of time. So in the past, wetlands have had big problems with hydraulic short circuiting and things like that. So to better engineer them, we're starting with simulating plug flow conditions, so it's like snaking through. And those compounds at the bottom are the same ones that I look at as well. The names get cut off, but this just shows where we sample. And in this cell, as I mentioned, because sunlight penetrates, there's also photolysis in addition to that biotransformation. So this is Justin's work. When Justin looks at transformation of pharmaceuticals in the POP cell, he needs to account for both photolysis and biotransformation. So those green bars on the right are his field rates, so the half-lives and the removal rates that he measures in that cell in the field. And then on the left, the red is a photolysis model, only accounting for photolysis. And then stacked on top, he's added biotransformation data from microcosms. And so it doesn't match up exactly, but as you can see, he's come pretty close to accounting for the transformation of each of these compounds in that POP cell using his model and his biotransformation data. So just goes to show that all of these processes combined, we can remove these pharmaceuticals, and he's pretty much figured out how. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of our research is the work that my friend Mi does, and she works on waterborne pathogens. So I really like this diagram. It just shows that you can have direct transformation where the sunlight itself inactivates the pathogens, or indirect where other species in the water are activated and they destroy the bacteria and other pathogens. So these figures are from a paper that Mi is currently working on, or she might have already submitted it. And it's just showing from two indicator organisms, non-pathogenic E. coli and Enterococci, from left to right, it is like dark control and then cloudy, and all the way on the right is full summer sun. And so for her, it's mostly mediated by photolysis. And the black bar is the inlet, and then so in each little set, it goes from the inlet to the outlet. And you can see that both of these indicator organisms are inactivated through the cell, and they're increasingly inactivated as the sunlight increases. And so she's figured out rates, and she's working on a model for this as well, which will then allow us to optimize these cells to inactivate waterborne pathogens. So that is just a brief overview of what the three of us are working on. And to kind of show the impacts that this work can have, this is just the engineering drawing of a full-scale open water cell that we worked with engineers down in Santa Ana at the Prado Wetlands to design and build. And so we have these three runs, and they can be run in series and parallel. And pretty much what we're doing here is showing that the pilot scale work that we've done at Disco Bay can be scaled up to a full scale system. And this is kind of proof of concept. And
how big are these?
Well, that dot is a truck. This guy. And I think it's a pretty big truck. So they're pretty huge.
Okay, so it's much larger scale.
yeah, it's way bigger. And this is a really rare opportunity for us, I think, as grad students and just in general, to take the work that we do and show that we can scale it up. And it's
more than theory.
Exactly. It's really viable. These open water cells, we just had some postdocs down at Prado. They got back yesterday, and they're putting water in like 2 weeks. And so we'll kind of get to show that all the work that we've done here is like very valuable and relevant to wetland systems anywhere.
What is the anticipated time frame for the mass that's on the bottom?
Yeah, for the periphyton to build up?
Yeah, before you can actually start to see and start to measure. Or do we know that?
We're not sure, and that's one of the big things we're interested in. So with or without the periphyton, we'll get the photolysis. But the periphyton, yeah, the biotransformation is significant. So that's one of our big questions.
That should make an interesting study, though, because now you can study just the impact of the photolysis without without having to buy the organic contributions to
it.
And that's extremely interesting.
Yeah, and that's actually really funny because I was talking with Justin about this today, and he was mentioning how he wanted to take those measurements here before the periphyton established, and he wasn't able to. So now we're able to look and see if it's even the same community of organisms in the periphyton, how long it takes to establish, how often they need to scrape it out.
So this is just a pop, though? This is not?
Yeah.
Okay.
These aren't vegetated. They have a ton of vegetated cells there already.
Yeah, this one isn't just a pop. Oh, yeah. Just a pop, but it's a larger scale pop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. They already have some other cells they're using with organic or bulrush or whatever they're choosing to use.
Yes, sir. Yeah, they're not as well designed as ours, but
of course not.
But yeah, they have the vegetated cells already, and the pop cell is kind of this novel.
And out of curiosity, the funding for this is coming from? Do you have any idea?
For this, probably.
Is it a grant?
Some of it's from Prado, and a lot of it's probably from we have a huge NSF grant.
Grant, right? Okay.
At Berkeley, I bet Prado paid for a lot of it. I really don't know.
And Prado is.
Those are the wetlands down in Santa
Ana.
Is it a
national?
It's a district. It's a water district.
It's a water
Orange
district.
County yeah. Water District.
Yeah, it is Orange County Water District.
Okay.
And they have these huge, like many, many, many acres of wetlands to reduce the nutrient load coming down the Santa Ana River because it's predominantly wastewater effluent. And so they really need the wetlands to.
Were they created wetlands to do this?
Yes, sir. Yeah,
they're
constructed.
Okay.
So all the wetlands that I'm discussing are constructed. Yeah, because we're dumping wastewater in, so got to be careful with natural wetlands.
Okay.
I'm pretty much wrapping it up, but I just wanted to conclude with saying that wetlands can be a successful polishing step for wastewater. I've shown a little bit of data on how pharmaceuticals and pathogens are transformed and inactivated, and that these can be optimized as unit processes and hopefully used in a treatment train someday. And we're kind of showing that with the work that we've done here and the upscaling at Prado. And I wanted to emphasize that pilot scale systems are so important for this work, and we're really grateful to Discovery Bay because it's a rare opportunity to get to work in a pilot scale system and run experiments in the field. And it's just made a really big difference for the three of us and led to a number of publications. And Justin's actually graduating this year, and his entire dissertation is based on work at Discovery Bay. So with that,
this is
the whole team that works on natural systems, Justin and myself, and then me, our colleague who does pathogens, we're all in there. David's wearing a beanie in the back. And yeah, I mean, we have an NSF grant, and so that's great, and we thank them. But we really want to thank y'all, because our work completely depends on the wetlands here.
How long do you see it taking before we find out if this, in fact, would be a worthwhile? Obviously, if it works well, it's going to be mandated by knowing. Just because I spent a few years in the state of California, I'm thinking that if in fact it is a good polishing step prior to release, especially since like an organization like ourselves who dump right into Middle River.
Yeah.
How long do you see before getting results that would in fact it's hard to say, I know.
Sure. Well,
I mean, is it 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out?
It's really hard to say, because the thing with these wetlands too is that they're seasonally dependent. So in the winter, there's less sunlight intensity,
right.
Everything's colder. So I think that in the next, maybe 15 years,
okay.
Wetlands could be a viable, one piece of the puzzle. But I think it would be hard to rely on them all the time, except for in places where it's never really cold.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
Mojave.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to put a wetlands in the Mojave, that's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So it's hard to say, because us publishing papers in environmental science and technology is going to take a while for it to trickle down. But that is why I've mentioned our NSF funding. We got David and Dick Luthy from Stanford got this huge grant for an engineering research center. through the NSF, and so we collaborate with Stanford, Colorado School of Mines, and New Mexico State. And the whole idea of this center is that we, most of the other ones are on like solar cells or some like product. We're like an engineering research center to develop products and technology and disseminate them. So we have lots of industry partners and then regional and state partners and things like that. So I think actually that we've got a better shot at getting our work visible and more used by, say, consultancies and stuff like that due to this research center than most. So it may be long, but it won't be quite as long as the usual academic time scale, which who knows how long that is.
Samantha, do you have any questions? Chris, any questions? No. Marianne? Bill?
Yeah, the only, well, just wrapping up, if I understood properly, it's taken us about 7 years to get to this point.
We've had, when we first started this 7 years ago, our intent, our target was to remove copper. In 2003, our permit, when we got our new MPDS permit, they had lowered our copper number and we were exceeding it. And so we had to pay $3,000 and it was a big issue. 2008, when we got our new permit, they raised the copper number. We had just solved the problem using the wetlands to remove, we saw on the horizon, copper and aluminum was going to be a big issue. And so they raised the number, so now there really isn't a problem. We started to say, let's look at pharmaceutical, something that the it's the worldwide issue, not just Discovery Bay issue, but worldwide. Look at that, and let's try to look at salinity as another one. And so they took on pharmaceutical. I'm really happy that they have got to where they are now, because they know that they could polish their water off. And since a lot of us here play in this water, you then know better that we are removing some of those pathogens on the water.
There wasn't a percentage, and I don't know how well the polishing is working at the moment based on the numbers.
Oh, percentage removal of
yeah.
the pharmaceuticals?
Yeah,
and
you mentioned
like that.
Half-life.
Yeah, we tend
to
look at things as like rates and half-lives and things like that, but I can get, gosh, if I can remember, between I think like 40 and 90% removal. And so most of these are pretty, some of them are pretty recalcitrant because they make it through the wastewater treatment plant. And so some of them you're never really going to get rid of. Like one compound, carbamazepine, it's used as a tracer. Like no one can really get rid of that thing. So we're looking at a range of compounds, stuff that's pretty easily removable in most systems to things like carbamazepine. So we can get good removal of some things, and it's
sure.
a range.
So based on just the compounds that you showed us here,
yes, sir.
If I understand it properly, you have looked at, you're looking for other things too, and some have worked and some don't work, et cetera.
Yes,
but these you're pretty comfortable. These are working.
Yeah, so we see
but
some
there might
removal.
Be some
other. Yes, sir. Yeah, so okay. Triclocarban, we can get rid of a lot of it. And it depends on how long you hold the water in the cell.
Mm.
So this data is from a residence time in the cell of about a week. And so I kind of change that sometimes too. Yes, sir.
Okay.
But
so a year and a half, 2 years from now, the Prado project should start to show numbers,
sure,
of
yeah,
some
and
sort, and because it's longer, are you able to hold? You should be able to hold it longer.
We can, but the residence time, it all depends on the flows coming in and out. So it'll probably
right.
have to. Yeah, we can't hold it there forever, or because they have that river's huge.
Okay,
I don't even
so
know how many.
All right, so there's a lot cubic feet of water. Okay.
Yeah, and in the pop cell, they tend to have residence times around a day and a half, so that goes pretty quickly.
All right. If there are if there's no more questions, first of all, I'd like to thank you for coming all the way out here.
Yeah,
we appreciate your presentation on behalf of the board. Thank you. And also on behalf of the board, I'd like to present you with a check for $2.
To pay for your fuel.
Yes.
Money or Starbucks.
This is
absolutely.
This is $34,500 we'd like to give you for your demonstration project.
Excellent.
And we made it out to you. We thought that would be okay.
That'd be awesome. just nobody mentioned it to David.
Your name, your name is University of California, isn't it?
I wish.
Samantha,
thank
you very much.
Thank you very
those,
much.
Just
thank
so you,
you
know, those funds are to fund Samantha's research for the next year. That's what those funds are intended to do. And David is the professor that's in charge. David Sedlak?
Sedlak,
yes.
And he's been out here before.
I talked to him the other day, and I said, you know, why don't you come on out and give the presentation? He says, no, I want Samantha to do it. It's her project, it's her presentation, it's her grant. And so we're thrilled to have you.
Well,
so that will get you through graduation? Your parents should be thrilled.
Yeah, right. Maybe I'll get them to come out here for that.
What year are you?
It's my third year, beginning of my third year. It takes us around six. Oh. So Justin's in his sixth year. He's finishing up.
Excellent.
Yes, sir.
PhD.
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
So,
thank you again for your presentation. We appreciate it.
Thank you all
very
so
well
much.
Very well. Thank you very much.
The ride back is much quicker than the ride out. The traffic will be gone. All right, let's. Before we move on, President's Report, Director's Comments. Are there any Director's Comments? Marianne?
I don't know if it's a problem. I just wanted to thank Rick for Saturday. He was out there. I saw him even cleaning out the trash cans without gloves. So appreciate the fact that he donated his time to help out with that event.
We'll buy him some gloves.
Bill?
Comments based on where we went. I don't know if this is the right time or not, but I went to the P6 meeting yesterday, and the discussion was about funding the SRO, and the school district was there. They put on a pretty good case that they don't have the money to do it, and it's not their obligation. The P6 committee was questioning staff as to why we can't get more funding. And it came down to, well, the sheriff's department allocates the budget, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a comment made, well, let's invite the sheriff here so he can explain it to us in person. So they are going to ask Sheriff Livingston to attend the next meeting. They were going to have a special meeting because they have to put their budget together before January. So there may be a chance, and I suggested that they send a letter to our board to invite any I'd wanted to come while the sheriff is there because we have issues, I believe, with the funding here, and I would like to see more sheriff. So there might be an opportunity for us to actually have the sheriff sitting in the room, and we might be able to have a little discussion with him and maybe influence his budget decision-making for Discovery Bay.
I know we don't comment on comments, but I will tell you from past experience with the sheriff prior and now, they don't have any money. They really don't have
the money. I don't disagree that the allocation has to come from the supervisors. And they're the ones that have
their biggest problem is as they try to bring sheriff's deputies out here, when they get a call in Richmond, they consider the priority to be that area. So to them sending somebody out to Happy Town, Discovery Bay, they send them to Richmond instead. Anyway, it's not here for discussion. It was just
no problem, and I appreciate the input. But anyway, we have an opportunity to have a personal visit if anyone might want to participate.
Excellent. Chris, anything?
Yeah, I just want to say that the event held by the Discovery Chamber of Commerce and the Discovery Alliance Club at the Community Center went off very well. It was a great turnout. I want to thank Virgil and Rick and the town staff for having the property ready to go and the follow-up and the cleanup. And I just want to say that was a great way to introduce a lot of new people to our community center. So thank you.
Kevin? I'd like to echo what Chris just said. I spent the day there myself. It was absolutely a lot of fun. It couldn't have gone off smoother. It was for a first-time event on our property. It was like it was meant to be there. It kind of reminded me of fairs I've been to in the past. Everybody seemed at home in there. Everybody fit in. I mean, to me, to have the Rocktoberfest on the asphalt across the street at Aldino's made no sense. When you watched all these people, the kids were having a ball. Everybody had a great time. Lions Club did a really good job. And again, I would like to congratulate us for allowing that to happen. It turned out perfect. Let's move on to a new business. Item F1, which is the agency comment request for the development of the sign at Safeway for the new gas sign.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is a agency comment request from the County of Contra Costa. You've seen these before. Page 22 shows what the proposed change would be. It is an application by the property owner, Pacific Bowie Tracy II, to modify the existing Safeway gas station sign, their electronic monument sign up front. As you know, they have recently transitioned from a one price package to a cash or credit package, and so they want to be able to show that on their on their monument signage out front. As indicated, page 22 of the report does show an artist or a rendering of what that sign would look like, and I'm looking for more directions to what you would like to do.
Well, I can tell you that it's almost identical to what they already had. It's a tiny bit wider. I mean, I see nothing of an issue here. I don't know if there's any discussion from the rest of the board.
I think it's fine.
If not at this point, if we do nothing, is what I think at this point we just don't voice any opposition is what we're going to be doing.
The standard letter that we send out generally says that the board took under consideration had no negative comments.
Yeah, that's an agreement with the board. It's fine with everybody. We don't need a motion for that either, do we? We just direct staff to send a letter.
Yes. Okay. Well, you should do that by motion.
All right. Let's direct staff to do that.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right, let's move on to next item, which is going to be a draft request proposal regarding future consideration of the formation of a town Discovery Bay strategic plan.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you here tonight is just, I'm just giving it to you now as an informational item. It's a draft of a request for proposal that I will be bringing back to the board probably later this year or early next year, and as part of our annual budget planning process, the annual budget workshop we do at the beginning of the year in January. It is a strategic plan is generally established by companies, businesses, public agencies that help articulate their plan, what their goal is for the next 5, 10, up to 20, 25 years into the future. It allows us to be able to help determine where to spend capital, whether it be human capital, dollars, resources, that sort of thing. One of the things that we picked up when Director Weiss and I attended the conference in Monterey a month or so ago was the overriding recommendation of the presenters that a strategic plan is critical for an organization. And I'm bringing this to you this evening because as we attend the conference in Napa next month, this I'm sure will be a conversation piece. So I just wanted to have it. I wanted to give you a copy of what the RFP might look like, what it might entail when it comes back, if the board does want to pursue going down this road. Your involvement would certainly be sought after in terms of the development of the RFP, as well as if we did go that route and hire a consultant, we would interact with the community, get their involvement in it, certainly the board and staff, and try and get all the stakeholders involved that are here in our community. So again, like I say, right now at this point in time, I'm just putting it out there for you. I'm not looking for any decision tonight. If you take it home, take a look at it, read it, ask questions, I'd be more than happy to discuss it. And that's about it.
Questions?
Nope. Yeah, what's the average cost of a strategic plan? And I know it depends on the size of the city, et cetera, but I'd be comfortable kind of knowing what.
You know, I've done a little research on them since I got back, and I looked at some of the pricing, and I've looked at some that have been relatively inexpensive. $10,000, $20,000, $25,000 is relatively inexpensive for something like this, all the way up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Obviously, we would be nowhere near that realm. I would probably suspect that an agency of our size would probably be in the $25,000 to $40,000 range. That's a ballpark estimate based on what I've seen and what other communities, small cities, have had over the last 5, 7, 8 years when they awarded their contracts.
And the other question I had, I did briefly go through the draft proposal, but one of the spots in there that I kind of thought, why put a budget number in the proposal that we're sending out if we went back this way? Why would we even tell consulting firms, well, we think it's going to cost X? Why would we do that?
Well, just like an engineering construction project, we always have to release what the engineer's estimate is. The budget number would be a public number to begin with, and so you can certainly not include it. I've seen it go both ways.
Oh, because we would have to vote on it, we would have to authorize number at that time. Okay. Because they kind of playing cards, and you're telling the guy or what's
three aces.
Yeah. But again, you know, this is one of those types of contracts that would be based upon qualifications versus price. You know, you're not going to hire the lowest firm to do this kind of work necessarily if it's one guy on a computer versus a, you know, for $2,500 versus a whole firm that has historically done these in the past and they know what they're doing and they know the process, they would probably be more money than the guy that's never done it before.
Kevin?
How does this differ from our five-year plan that we or
master plan
that we put together? And
we're mandated to do that, I believe, every 5 years by the state, every 10 years by the state. How often would
I don't think you're mandated to do it.
Well, it's recommended that you do it. Okay, so how does this differ from that plan?
That's an excellent question, and I actually asked that question. And the answer that I was given is that your master plans that we've completed are subsidiary to this. They are a component of it, as is our capacity fee study, as is our rate study. They're all parts of the puzzle that will all be utilized in order to develop the long-term strategic plan as to where you want to go.
So then this is taking all these other sub-plans that we put together and bring them into a big picture?
Yep, not just water, wastewater, parks, landscaping, recreation.
Okay. When you said you asked that question, obviously you must have been in a class, or what prompted this, I guess?
It was at the conference.
In one of the
sessions
that you went to?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? You need no action on this, am I correct?
Not this evening.
Okay.
If I think it's premature at this point to take an action on it, because I really am looking forward to the discussion and getting the five of you, as well as myself, in the conference in Napa, the opportunity to really talk to some of the professionals that are familiar with this and kind of drill down to some of the questions you might have. I've never done one before, so this is it'll be a good experience for me as well.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Let's move on to Veolia. Furman, how are you tonight?
Fine, thank you. Good evening, town and board. My name is Furman Garcia, Veolia Water. Project manager for the Sound Discovery Bay of presenting the.
We can't hear you at all for the recording.
Good evening, town. My name is Furman Garcia with Veolia Water. Project manager for Sound Discovery Bay. I'm presenting the September monthly operations report and highlighting some of the report. For monthly training, we had excavation, trenching, shoring, and ergonomics under operations. So we had all the operators were trained on the new belt filter press that was placed into service this month. And all plant personnel participated in compliance-based training refresher. These are the reports that were submitted for the month of September. The water produced for September was 129.93 million, 23,718 gallons of HIPO was delivered. There were 16 back T samples that were sampled all negative. The wastewater laboratory analysis up over the September results, the effluent monthly total was 39.04 million gallons. The daily average influent was 1.49. The daily discharge flow was 1.30. The BOD, pounds per day monthly average, was 18 pounds. The total suspended solids monthly average was 41 pounds. The BOD milligrams per liter monthly average was 1.8. And the total suspended solids milligrams per liter monthly average was 4.0. The max total coliform was 7. The median max, that is, and the daily max was 13. The BOD percent monthly average removal was 99.1%. The TSS was 96.8. And the EC was 2135 year to date. Any questions on that? We had zero excursions. Wastewater, bacteriological is 8. We had no SSOs, and the wastewater received was 44.64. Under collections, we flushed 4,068 feet of sanitary sewer lines for year to date of 8,310, or 12.59% completed. 8 manhole covers were inspected year to date, 37. Lakes lift station, lift station A, lift station S were troubleshooted, and lakeshore lift station, back to mount troubleshooting. Under wastewater, cleaned UV channel 3000 plus. I just get the highlights on this. We troubleshooted wiring issues on Magna Rotor Brush number 1 at plant 2. Troubleshooting influent pump number 5, had to reseed it and it's working well and properly now. And we also troubleshooted plant number 2, clarify fire number 3 collector drive torque problem. Any questions with this? Underwater, this was kind of interesting. We experienced PLC problems with Willow Water Treatment Plant, and we had to operate the facility in a manual mode for a few days.
What's a PLC?
Programmable Logic Controller.
Okay.
And the Myers Circuit Control came out and troubleshooted the Willow Plant. They had to replace the I.O. card, which is input-output card, it's communication card in the PLC. What's interesting is that we have to train the operators to the level that they have to control everything in a manual mode and not rely on computers or programmable logic controller. We have to get them to that understanding. Nowadays, it's getting more and more difficult with the younger generation. They're all computerized. They all want to just push buttons and all reboot and that's it. But sometimes that doesn't work. You have to go out to each piece of equipment. You have to understand how they relate, how it impacts, you know, hydraulically down the line, and how to troubleshoot it.
Where are we at in the training right now?
Well, we train them like that before we put them on call.
Okay, so all of our staff?
Operators.
Okay.
Just the certified operators are the ones that can do that. So when something goes wrong, that's when everybody gets out there and I make sure that they get in there and learn, because that's when you really learn how things work. When it goes wrong, not when it's going right. Preventive and corrective PMs, we had 287. The work order backlog, aging 8, 30 days, 69. It was much higher last month. Yeah. We had 9 call-outs, personnel hours, 1,085 regular hours, and 48 hours overtime.
Our brown water issue is gone.
I wouldn't say it's gone, but we didn't have any calls out.
Gone.
I'll think that it's gone.
This time.
No calls.
Any questions for the board?
No, thanks, Furman.
Furman, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's move on to the manager's report. General manager?
Yes, I'd like to give you a test on the Samantha's presentation this evening. I hope you all took notes.
We sure did.
I was really impressed by that. I'm sure you guys were too. I don't have anything this evening other than the fact that
thank you, Furman.
That we did have a nice turnout Saturday, and from my perspective, it was a good opportunity to get people that have never been there. The comment that I heard back more often than not was, "Wow, I didn't know this was back here." So that was really good. And in fact, on Saturday morning, when they were out setting up, there was a tennis tournament going on. There were 2 families playing tennis on their own, and there was a birthday party in the swimming pool, and then the event took place. So that place was packed pretty much from morning until night on Saturday.
The funny part is the birthday party at the pool, when I got there was only 6 people at the party. They were all in the back at the tables. They had the pinata, and they were all playing in the back. There was only 6 kids. And the whole time they had
they're at the event.
You know, the other event, so they had 6. Which was great. I mean, I've heard nothing but positive. Everybody just called me or sent me an email or texted. This was the greatest. We felt at home. And as we walked around, the place was so warm and friendly. It was just kind of it was pretty cool.
Then I hate to bring up one negative fact. Next time this is planned, please check my personal schedule so I can attend and be part of the thing, so I'm not out of town.
We would have sent a letter for you.
Yeah, Cindy, thanks. You want me dead?
She's going to stop and have a couple of drinks and pick you up. Tape. Hello. Please erase the tape.
Oh, I do want to.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I couldn't be here, but, and I know this is your report, but you're not, I couldn't be here, but I agree with the vote of the board. I think it's great that we did this, because this is what the community center has been talking about. as you guys know from the very beginning, is let's engage the community. I think it's an awesome opportunity to do that, and I wished I could have been there to attend, but I was on the road.
Virgil?
On the road again?
Oh, yeah.
Are you giving a general manager's report tonight?
No, but I'd like to give you an update on a couple of things that are going on within the community.
Fire away.
We'll start with well number 7. We have drilled down to 170 feet where we installed a 40-inch steel casing down, and on the outside of that casing went concrete. We filled that up yesterday, what we call a second lift. First lift, we had to let set for a day, then you put another lift up to elevation level, and then today we started drilling to go down towards our goal to 400 feet deep with a smaller hole diameter, 30-inch diameter hole. Our game plan, hopefully the driller's game plan is to have that hole done. They'll start around the clock, and so the game plan is to have that done maybe after Friday afternoon, early evening, and then we'll start to put what we call the stainless steel casing that go in that hole to hold that hole in place. And the first part of that casing will be a screen that allows the water to come in, and at certain other intervals the screen will be in place, so that will be where the water that will come out of new well 7 will come from.
Excellent.
So that's our game plan to do that. We have been moving along with some of the construction projects, the greenhouses, the biosolids. The buildings are complete. What we have done today, I met with the electrical contractor to walk through what we're going to do and how they're going to do things. Walked in that building this morning at 9, it was already warm. He said, man, it's warm in here. And I said, yeah, you're lucky you're not doing it during the summer. You wouldn't be able to work in there, you'd be sweating. Mm-hmm. So they were really happy about that. But nevertheless, so we're moving along with that. And then the influent lift station W at plant number 1, that's moving along pretty good as well.
Good.
Any questions on any projects going on in town? The only thing I want to highlight tonight is I thought Samantha's report was excellent. I've never seen her give a report.
She's very
report.
Energetic. Yeah.
I've been with her for a couple of years. They come down maybe about once every other week, spend a couple hours down here and so forth like that. But the first part that they did, in a sense, where they did the metals removal, mainly copper and aluminum, I met with the regional board a couple of weeks ago, and their inkling is they're going to probably lower our copper number, which means we probably will exceed that number a couple of times through the course of the 5 years. How many times, I can't tell you. But it does look like they're going to ratchet that down. A ace in your pocket or the district's pocket is we know if we were to implement the wetlands as a process, as part of the process treatment train, we can then remove that copper, which then saves you the fine down the road.
Okay. How big of a wetlands would we have to, this is a pilot program, if we were to actually use this functionally as part of our effluent process, how big of a wetlands area would we have to add over an?
I don't know, you know, it'd be a few acres. I want to say about 60 to 70 acres. My game plan has always been to buy some land on the outside of plant number 2, create them the wetlands.
So we already own them. Bunch of acreage out.
We own another 40 more.
Oh, I thought we owned 150.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, but here's the other dilemma. It removed the copper and the aluminum and the metals, yeah. But it also produces a problem that might be harmful to the Delta. It's methmercury. And there is a major study going on now with methmercury throughout the whole Delta region that we would have to look at the pros and the cons and make our case to the regional board. We're going to do this wetlands to remove the copper, and maybe one of the cells is a pop if the pharmaceuticals, although pharmaceuticals isn't on anybody's
radar
to be removed. But nevertheless, we'll create a problem. Now, will the state buy off on that? Who's to say?
Why would removing the copper create a problem with methmercury?
Methmercury is produced in the wetlands part of it. And the carbon, when it dies down, the plants die down. That's where the removal takes place, not in the uptake of the plant itself. So it creates a methmercury down below, and a methmercury could
Because generally your wetlands would be your last treatment train, like today the UV is.
So you solve one problem and create another?
That's correct.
But they know this going in.
And they know, they being who?
The researchers that are doing our wetlands.
Yeah, project. Yeah, they're aware.
But my point is, if they know this going in and this is an issue, and Kevin just says it, we're going to solve the problem of copper and not be able to use the process because of the mercury.
Mercury, they may not.
But if they do, is this a total waste of money, this project?
No. It's an experiment to just see, will it work or not work?
We're part of a much larger methylmercury study that's taking place right now. It was mandated to us by the board. Instead of going out and doing the study ourselves on our facility, we joined the Central Valley Clean Water Association.
No, I understand this, Rick. That's not my question. Okay. My question is, if we're producing methylmercury, and there's a chance that they're
going to... byproduct of the...
And there's a chance they're going to stop us from releasing anything into the water, what is the point of doing them spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on this project?
On the copper or the wetlands?
Yeah,
we don't know. I mean, we may find there's another... That's an issue we got to put on their radar to say, can you remove methylmercury before it goes out the door?
Shouldn't we move this issue toward before we spend lots and lots more money? Before we find out that we spent this money for
nothing? Well, if you go down to the, if you were to use the wetlands to remove the metals, yes, we should look at that avenue. Because we want to show the state, or any environmental group, hey, we've explored this, and there may be a way to remove it, and there may not be a way to remove it. Who's to say?
And that's part of what the methylmercury study is doing.
Again, I agree. We're all saying the same thing. What I'm saying is, how much money do you throw at a project before you go, guess what? We can't use the project with methylmercury. We can't do it. And
yeah.
You say, okay, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. What do we do now?
I don't know. Can't answer that.
So at what point do we say to
the... You're talking the wetlands.
We're not doing the copper study anymore, though. We're not throwing any more money at that study.
Well, aren't we?
We're
still removing copper in the study, aren't we?
No.
We're not.
It's doing it as a
byproduct of being there, that's all.
As a
not what the research is.
But if our new permit raises our copper,
it's going to lower
our lowers our copper, which means we have to kill more of it, and killing it produces methylmercury, which doesn't allow us to kill it, then what happens?
I don't know.
Well, the good news is if they lower the copper limit, they're not going to lower it to below what our current thresholds are. It's because we're doing such a good job of it right now. They raised that limit a few years.
No, I know
that.
But nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody will give me an answer to the question I'm asking. If we're spending...
Nobody knows the answer to the question.
I shouldn't ask that question. We're being told now there may be a problem with methylmercury. We've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this wetlands project over the years.
We have... it was an experiment to see will it work or not, because we, in the engineer's world, they don't know for sure if it worked or not.
I remember in a budget back in 2008, we were fighting over $750,000 for the wetlands project.
It never went in.
We never did it.
This is the first money that the district has spent on the wetlands in a number of years.
It's all been through a grant. We just provided the land.
There was something else in there.
But let me ask you this while you're thinking about that.
We put the $750,000, I'm going back now, to look at buying some land across the way.
That's what it was for the wetlands.
But we never did it.
So methyl...
Mercury.
Methylene mercury?
Methyl mercury
is methylene. A problem throughout the delta because it is produced naturally by...
I can't tell you that. That's above my head.
Is it a human byproduct or a biological byproduct?
I think it's a biological.
Is it a byproduct of wastewater treatment?
Yes, that's what I hear.
Yeah, and so...
Is this what that gal was bending my ear about down in Santa Fe, down at Monterey, that lady next to me over? She was going off on all the different...
Well, we also believe the methylmercury is also a problem coming from the farmland.
Well, that's what I...
They discharge, and they're not regulated.
That's the same problem they're having with nitrates that are coming out of their fertilizer and all that stuff that they're blaming all the wastewater treatment plants for.
Anyway, I just want to let you be aware.
On the copper level, raising our permit, number.
The permit number.
Right, to take it out. Are we expected to do a better job of reducing the copper than, say, Iron House Sanitary District or Orange County Sanitary District?
I really don't know what their copper number is.
Right, well, everybody have a different copper number.
Because it all depends on your type of
what type
flows
of plant,
you have coming in, and that type of everyone is different. Although the state tries a wretched, everybody's down every time their permit comes down. In some cases, they don't ratchet lower enough that then other agencies sue the state or protest our permit, make the state put our numbers lower.
Just to be fair.
Our last permit that we currently are.
If I got to do it, you got to do it. And I'll sue you for it.
Our last permit, our current permit has already been sued on from Metropolitan Water and West Lakes Irrigation District. We have a lawsuit against the state for not lowering our numbers.
Well, that's because when they get our water, they want it clean.
Yes, right. That's right.
Then the copper, the source of the copper has been traced back to
house plumbing.
Everybody.
And I think as you well know, we've given probably close to 100 building permits for new homes. None of that is copper plumbing.
Right.
Plumbing, they're all.
But that's state mandated now, right? No copper plumbing.
No, that's district mandated.
Okay.
So to minimize, to lower our copper number.
Right.
So in essence, you may get more flows in, which will then help
dilute
the copper.
Pollution is the solution to pollution.
The more the gold.
Learn that, Monterey, too?
All right, let's move on. Thank you, Virgil, thank you.
I have one more item for you.
Go ahead.
And that is in January, the calendar for our January board meetings, the first board meeting in January, is the first Wednesday, is January the 1st. We're fortunate in that January, there are five Wednesdays in January, so we could adjust and go from first and third to second and fourth, and it would not disrupt our regular board meetings relative to the turnaround of the next meetings from one meeting to the next. So if you want us to go down that direction, we would recommend that we go, instead of the 1st and the 15th, we go to the 8th and the 22nd.
Does that work for everybody here?
Yep.
It works for me.
Sure.
I'm hearing no complaints.
Lock it in.
Go ahead and do it.
Okay, Dan has a conflict on the...
I'll send my colleague to my place.
He's a mountain house.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to district legal.
Nothing, sir.
Thank you. Well, your colleague gave us about a 20-minute presentation the other day.
I can send him back if you like.
Do we have any committee updates? Community center status report? No written report?
No, you do have that. The community center joint meeting is next Wednesday evening.
Thank you. Correspondence, East County Conference, nothing. Public records requests received, none. Any future agenda items? Marianne?
I have none.
Bill?
No.
Kevin?
No.
Chris?
No.
Mark?
No.
Thank you for coming.